For years, emergency managers have urged people to stockpile enough food, water, and supplies to last 72 hours after a disaster. In the Northwest, basic assumptions like that are now under scrutiny, especially when it comes to the risk from a big earthquake. Two communities in Oregon and Washington have been working for more than a year to come up with wide-ranging recommendations to improve the region's disaster resilience. Correspondent Tom Bonsi has this exclusive first look at some of the ideas.
Chances are you've heard the public service announcements.
It's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan.
Now a draft report by Oregon Seismic Safety Commission says the familiar three-day rule is not enough. One of the panel's members is Jay Wilson. He's an emergency manager with Clackamas County.
We've got to start talking about not days, but weeks. 2 to 4 weeks is really more reasonable, at least for now.
Wilson acknowledges the right amount of stockpiling is bound to vary by where you live. Generally, the closer to the coast, the more you'll need. You could be completely isolated after a big earthquake and tsunami. In parallel with Oregon, a similar committee of public and private sector experts in Washington has drafted recommendations to increase that state's resilience. State Earthquake and Tsunami Program Manager John Schelling says his group also talked about the 3 days of self-sufficiency standard, but reached no consensus for change.
As we look at people and communities during this pretty tough economic time, having more than 72 hours is a real challenge for people.
Where Washington and Oregon do align is in prioritizing seismic upgrades to schools and hospitals. Oregon's draft resilience report says 1,100 school buildings stand at high or very high risk of collapse in a major earthquake. The comparable number for Washington is unknown. So the very first recommendation in Washington's draft plan is to assess all schools for seismic safety. Again, Jay Wilson.
Schools, in many ways, are the cultural centers of a lot of communities, and if their children can't go to school, then they can't go to work, and so protecting schools becomes a huge cornerstone of community resiliency.
Both state panels also want better tsunami evacuation planning for the coast. The Oregon Committee debated whether to recommend no new buildings in areas prone to flooding by tsunamis, but in the end decided to leave those decisions to local government. Washington's Seismic Advisory Panel wants backup generators installed in more places. At State Emergency Management, John Schelling says several recent storms have reinforced the usefulness of backup power at cell phone towers and gas stations, for example.
Well, we saw that during the snowstorms just this past year. And that's sort of what we would expect to see, you know, in a pretty significant earthquake. Communications degrading over time as cell towers lose battery capacity, lose generator capacity, and the ability to refuel those generators.
This points to a dilemma both expert panels faced, whether to mandate greater resilience or just encourage good deeds. In Salem, State Representative Deborah Boone says she prefers not to take a heavy-handed, top-down approach.
The areas in the state that will be affected, they're going to be affected differently, so a mandate in one area might work, but we think it's more important to engage the players, the local players, and have them, you know, do what's appropriate for their area.
Then there's also the money issue. Take schools. Boone says Oregon simply doesn't have the capacity to issue the $200 million in bonds per year that would take to fully address seismically vulnerable schools. The chairman of Washington's Resilience Initiative says the hardening of public and private infrastructure looks more doable if you take it piece by piece over a long time period. Washington's plan has a 50-year horizon. I'm Tom Bonsi in Olympia.